Memory Static is a listener-supported podcast. Your contributions really make a difference in helping us keep the show going. So please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/memorystatic. Enjoy the show.
Welcome back to Memory Static, the podcast that finds the movies you loved when you were little, talks about them, and throws a party to watch them. And stay tuned at the end of the episode for an original song based on the movie we're covering tonight. Speaking of which, welcome to my guest, Kate Windsor.
Hello.
Hello. And so you've been to several parties. I don't even know how many.
I am intimately involved.
Yes. But as intimately involved as you are, this is your first time choosing the movie.
Yes, and I kind of forcefully made it my choice.
That's right. Why don't you tell us the story without telling
what the movie is?
What the movie okay. is, yeah.
So you texted me and your brother that one of us could be the host of the next podcast party. And then I replied that we had agreed it would be me, and then I talked to your brother about it. And then I won the following game of rock, paper, scissors.
That's right. Like, you actually texted me saying, "That's me," before yes. y'all had even done it.
I had predictive powers.
That's pretty incredible. Well, okay, so predictive powers. How's this party going to go tonight?
It's going to be great. I mean, I'm going to have a good time. And that's really all that matters.
That really is all that matters, for sure. Okay, so before we get to the movie, tell us a little about yourself and what you're doing right now.
What I'm doing right now, I'm Kate. I am in the demographic of early 20s. I recently graduated from college, and now I have a job, and I'm going to go back to college soon.
Yes, congrats on your GRE.
Yes,
success.
I did that well.
Yes, you did. Okay, so do you feel warmed up now?
Sure.
Great. What movie are you going to be watching tonight?
Phantom Toll Booth.
The Phantom Toll Booth. Do you know anything about this movie?
I'm sure you're going to tell me a lot of trivia about the movie that I never thought that I could be interested in. but it's going to be interesting.
I'll try to make it interesting.
Yeah. Well, I'm ready for there to be like some odd person who's really famous now who popped up in this movie somewhere. 'Cause why not?
So like, to the best of your ability, can you give us a short summary without too many spoilers?
Yes, I can. I've been thinking about this.
Great, great, great.
And the best summary I could think of without giving any spoilers is the following. Milo is bored, and then he's not.
Perf. We got it. We nailed it.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
All right.
Okay, so how old were you when you watched this, and when was the last time you saw it?
I don't even remember when the first time I saw this movie was. So it must have been like before I could really form solid memories. And it's just always been in the back of my mind. I know that it's one of the movies that my dad pirated from Blockbuster when we used to get Blockbuster movies, and my dad would feed it into the machine that copied it onto an unmarked VHS tape and then put a label on it with a semi-accurate label marked on it. Mm-hmm. And so I think I remember like two or three times when I kind of forgot about this movie and then looked in the VHS cabinet and then was like, wait a minute, I know that movie. I'm going to watch that one. And then I would forget about it again because I had a very short attention span.
So is that why you chose this tonight? Because you've already forgotten it again?
Well, I love this movie. I actually have seen it recently.
Oh, yeah.
I showed it to your brother. A while ago, because he showed me a movie from his childhood. So then I was like, it's all right. Mine's better.
Was his not very good?
I don't even remember what it was.
Well, it must have not been
very good. He might be annoyed
good.
Hearing this. But I watched it with him and another friend who had read the book and not seen the movie. And I didn't even know it was a book until relatively recently, having only seen the movie. And so we were accidentally giving Cullen spoilers with our body language because we both knew the plot, even though it was from different perspectives.
How funny. How funny. You know, I want to talk about the book a little bit later because I know that you've finished it extremely recently.
Minutes ago.
Okay, so you picked this movie to share with us.
Yeah.
It's one of your favorite movies.
It is.
So way, 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 way back when we recorded episode one,
all right,
Legend, I asked everybody that came to the party if when they were little they had crushes on anthropomorphic characters in a cartoon or something like that. So your answer, because I recently went back and listened to it, your answer was actually not included in the final cut of the episode.
I must not have finished listening to the episode, and I apologize.
No worries. But the reason why I talk about this is that now we can talk about your crush.
Yeah. Crush is a strong word. When you asked me that question, I kind of blanked because I didn't have a good answer, and this was the first character that came to my mind. Mm-hmm. And it's the Weatherman. Yes, the Weatherman, whether this or that. And I still think he's adorable. I don't know if I would say I had a crush on him because I didn't really have a good conception of that kind of feeling until later than my peers. Mm-hmm. But if I was going to spend time with a fictional character and enjoy myself, it would probably be the Weatherman.
Is that your favorite character?
That is possible. Sorry for the silence. I'm trying to think now because I did just finish the book, and so there are more characters now.
Well, I'm talking specifically in the movie.
Right, in the movie. Well, I guess so. Or Dr. Dissonance.
That scene is probably one of my favorites because I had never seen this movie until a couple years ago when I was in a classroom.
Oh, so you have seen it before?
I had, yes, but I didn't get to finish it. So
you saw it in a classroom?
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah, while I was subbing.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And when you chose it, I got to finish the movie. And because while I was there, I was watching kids. So mm-hmm. I didn't really get to pay attention to it.
What a great movie to put on as a sub.
Yeah, it was pretty fun.
Yeah.
I had read the book at that point. So this was the first time I'd gotten to see the movie. But anyway, I'm really glad you chose it. It's a really great movie. And for anyone that's interested in watching it along with us, you can rent it on an Amazon Prime. Rent it or buy it. So the world that Milo travels to through the toll booth is a paradise of play on words, wouldn't you say?
Half of it is.
Well, yes. But even in the math area, there's still, you know, kind of playing with
ideas.
Yeah.
They coalesce the Dictionopolis and Digitopolis.
Yes.
Yeah. The thing they have in common is ideas, because then the rest of the world is just ignorance.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Or the doldrums.
Yeah. Which is, I guess, a different kind of ignorance.
Yeah. So did you like play on words or puns when you were little?
I know I read voraciously when I was little. I don't know if I gave much thought to words beyond their message.
Mm-hmm.
But I did really enjoy messing with my cousin who used to have a brain tumor that didn't allow him to understand sarcasm. No one knew he had a brain tumor until last year, but, everyone just called him Mr. Literal. And so I would just say blatantly false things to him and make him mad. And he didn't like me very much. So I saw him at Thanksgiving and we made amends and it was nice.
That's good.
Yeah.
I love happy endings.
Yeah. The scar where his tumor got removed is shaped like a question mark, which is very appropriate.
How interesting. So I don't know if this is too personal, but
he'll never listen to this.
We like, since he had that tumor removed, is he able to understand sarcasm?
He's definitely friendlier. I think he kind of semantically learned how to understand sarcasm growing up, but he's definitely has more of a sense of humor now. And he talks to me without disgust, which is great.
Wow. That's fascinating. Brains are so interesting.
Yeah, I was a neuroscience major.
I know.
I should have mentioned that when I talked about college.
That's okay. You were talking about it now.
Yeah.
How interesting. So did you feel like when you were little, were you more of a words person or a math person? I knew you just said that you were you read voraciously, but
definitely a words person. I accepted math as a part of life. but the, you know, I want to say that I was a recognition person, and it was much easier to get recognized for reading a lot than it was for doing a lot of math. So like I had my picture in the elementary school library in the Hall of Fame for like reading a certain number of books.
Oh yeah. Nobody had like their name in the Hall of Fame for
math.
There was solving an addition problem.
Yeah. Cause there's this whole sanctuary dedicated to words, and there's not an equivalent for math.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is ironic because now my life is more dominated by the math side.
I would assume so.
Yeah. I'm in a STEM field.
So, I was much more of a words person as well. I hated math for a really long time. Like I was good at it, but it always felt like a chore to me. And in fact, I held a grudge against subtraction for a really long time because I messed up a problem because I didn't carry a number correctly.
You gotta carry that three.
Yeah. And I felt really obstinate about it, that it was the math problem's fault, not mine, that I got it wrong.
The math problem tricked you?
Yeah, that it intentionally tricked me. And so I held a grudge against subtraction for a really long time.
You would not have survived with my father. He's a mathematician. And one of the reasons why I veered more towards words and less towards math, besides what I already said, was that he was a really bad math tutor. To only his own kids, because he's also tutored kids at the high school. And he was a great tutor for them because he didn't have any expectations of them. But if I got a problem wrong and I tried to explain my reasoning, I would get cut off and told, you know, forget whatever you did. It's wrong. Here's the correct thing. And that's not a good way to learn.
It's difficult. It's difficult to learn without someone teaching the process.
Mm-hmm.
I would see like, yeah, no, I don't want to get too much into that. But yeah, break down the process so that a child can understand their own reasoning where a mistake was made, and then move on. As I teach.
Yeah, you're a teacher. And he could do that with other kids. It just, for some reason, he couldn't understand why his children weren't as smart as he was as children.
Everybody's got a different intelligence.
Yeah.
Not a different level of intelligence, just
different
like
types.
A different type of intelligent. So, okay, one more question before we move into the slow moving time machine. What did you do when you were bored when you were little? Because Milo gets bored. He gets so bored, he can't even bother to think about what he could do to not be bored. And that's when the Phantom Toll Booth shows up and he's invited to go on this magical journey. Mm-hmm. So what did you do when you were bored?
Well, I can tell you that the Phantom Toll Booth never would have showed up at my house. I was consistently making an awful din of some sort, whether that was getting out all of the Tupperware and pots in the kitchen and just banging, like not even trying to do drums, just banging on them, or tormenting my little sister until she had a tantrum, which was really easy to trigger. I don't know, tearing apart the couch and like jumping on the cushions. I had awful dins, both of the aural and emotional, and it was really easy to entertain myself just to see the cause and effects that I could cause and effect.
That's pretty great. I mean, like, I played solitaire. Yours is much more interesting.
Probably much more annoying, too.
Well, you may be.
Everyone loves a like quiet child who will just entertain themselves in a corner.
Yeah, but I think there's something really special about a bombastic child. Well, so are you ready to move into the slow moving time machine?
I'm very ready. I have heard tell tale of the effects of this time machine.
Okay. All right. So, you know, it's that thing over there.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. Go right ahead. Go right ahead.
All time machine systems online. Systems go.
Oh God, the right side of my body.
Oh no. Are you having an adverse effect?
You didn't tell me which part of me would be in the movie and which part would be here. So now I guess I'm going to talk out of the left side of my mouth.
Oh, I've never thought about that before. I've never experienced it this way. I am so sorry.
Well, you got what you wanted. Half of me is over there and half of me is over here. You get this half of me.
Well, it's a great half.
Thanks. So I think it's my better half.
I can't say which half is better, but it's a good half.
Okay.
And so now that we're here, like, do you know what happened? Do you know, like, what's going on out there? Obviously.
Well, I have this weird, very faint sense of popcorn in the right side of my mouth. So I feel like that might happen.
Okay, so let me explain to everyone else. When you step into the slow-moving time machine, which only moves slightly faster than real life, it gives us the opportunity to talk about the movie inside the time machine while also watching the movie out with the rest of the party, because it has a split our existence into twain.
In this case, the left half and the right half of my existence.
Yeah, that's unusual. That is a new one and slightly disturbing.
Well, fortunately, it's only a separation of time, so my guts are just kind of floating in between the two existences.
Well, please do not turn.
Okay, I'll sit with my left side facing you.
Thank you, because I don't know. I feel like if you were to like turn just, you know, like 90 degrees, I might faint.
So. Well, the left half of my stomach is settled, and I hope that yours is fully settled.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. We've never had that sort of accident here, and I'm not really wanting to clean up vomit today. So we'll get this handled.
Okay, and we should warn everyone.
I will warn people in the future. Absolutely. Thank you, Kate. Oh, gosh, I'm sorry.
Need a little sign up there.
Yeah, just a little sign.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay.
Don't worry, everybody. We're monitoring this very closely.
Well, it looks like the time machine has treated you, though. I've never seen that happen. Maybe the time machine feels some kind of simpatico. I mean, did you notice the drink that just appeared in the arm of the chair? Oh, you're missing that eye. So
yeah.
let me just say, like, if you were to reach across your body, there is, like, I bet some kind of alcoholic beverage that has been put there.
Oh, like the right side of my body is imbibing of alcohol?
No. In the time machine, there is a drink.
See.
You just can't see it. So if you were to reach across.
This way?
Yes, that way.
Did I get it yet?
Yes, you've got it.
Right
just
there?
Close your hand.
Okay.
All right. Now
I have the left half of a soda.
I don't know why that's split as well. Maybe the time machine isn't doing you a favor. Maybe it's just making fun of you.
You know, half a soda is more than no soda.
That's true. I don't know, like, if you're going to have trouble drinking that, but
I'm going to pause this. I'm going to set this aside until I have my whole mouth to drink it with.
Cause that's fair.
I don't want to make a mess.
That is absolutely fair.
In fact, I'm going to put this half a soda in the sink because I don't want that to make a mess either.
Okay. That's great. I'm glad we have a sink in here. Anyway, you want to learn about this movie?
Yes, I do. With the left side of my brain.
Okay. So what we're going to do is we're going to pick up where the story of Gay Paris left off.
Okay.
If you want to hear, those that listening at home, you want to hear about the psychedelic UPA animated feature starring Judy Garland, check out episode 2. Did you happen to listen to the episode? No. Okay, that's fine. So just to give a little bit of background, Chuck Jones had been fired from Warner Brothers for violating his contract by moonlighting on Gay Paris. Very dramatic. So in 1962, he established his own studio called Sib Tower 12 Inc. And many of the animators from Warner Brothers followed him over, and as well as voice actor Mel Blanc. Do you know who Chuck Jones is?
I have heard this before.
Okay.
Name before.
Well, he directed Phantom Tollbooth. And
cool.
For anyone unfamiliar with Chuck Jones, he was an animator responsible for writing, producing, and directing many of the classic Looney Tunes cartoons.
Cool. That's about the level of stardom that I was expecting to pop up.
Okay. So I imagine that by the time that Chuck Jones was fired from Warner Brothers, he was a pretty hot commodity. And so it didn't take long before MGM Studios approached Sib Tower 12 to produce and run a new run of Tom and Jerry cartoons.
I loved Tom and Jerry.
I figured you would. Cullen also really likes Tom and Jerry. Not my favorite, but I understand why people like them. Chuck Jones was not pleased with his work on Tom and Jerry because they weren't his characters.
I was pleased with your work, Chuck.
So he didn't know what to do with them. So ultimately they became Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner.
Also excellent.
Yeah, they are. But I think if you were to watch those, which is really obvious when it makes the switch to Chuck Jones because they look like Looney Tunes characters, that they behave a lot like Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner, just a cat and a mouse.
That Tom and Jerry do?
Yeah.
Okay.
But even though Chuck Jones wasn't particularly inspired by this work on Tom and Jerry, the shorts did so well that in 1964, MGM purchased Sib Tower 12 and renamed it MGM Animation and Visual Arts. And then in 1965, Chuck Jones worked on an abstract short based on a Norton Juster children's book called Yay! The Dot and the Line.
Oh, a different one.
And who is Norton Juster?
He wrote the book.
He wrote the
Phantom
book,
Tollbooth.
Phantom Tollbooth.
I'm going to have to read Dot and Line now.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe you should. So that short that they worked on together nabbed the Academy Award that year for animated short. But I want to go on a bit of a digression about the Dot and the Line because, you know, it's a short. We'll probably never cover it fully like this. But I was thinking that we might watch it ahead, like before the movies. So when we rejoin ourselves, well, actually, you can tell me, are we watching it out there?
I think we are. I can sense this really vague music and some shapes.
And it's not familiar to you?
I don't think so.
Okay.
At least not to the left side of me.
Okay. Well, so I want to talk a little bit about The Dot and the Line because I think it is definitely worth checking out. The Dot and the Line is cute. And it's beautifully animated. The storyline, it's about a line that falls in love with a dot. But the dot is flighty and is more interested in a spontaneous squiggle.
This sounds exactly like Norton Juster.
Yeah. So the line then works really, really hard to bend itself and learns to create all sorts of beautiful shapes. The line then shows the dot what it has accomplished, and the dot leaves the squiggle. It's really cute. I'm a sucker for personifying inanimate things. Absolutely.
I'm a sucker for things changing what they are for love.
Aren't we all?
We got the dot and the line, and we got Grease.
Yeah, right. Exactly. That is exactly where I'm going with this.
Yeah?
Exactly where I'm going with this. Because the unfortunate thing about this short is that they gender the shapes.
How?
The line is male. And the dot is female, which automatically dates it as pretty sexist.
Okay. But how, though? I guess I'll find out when the right
side of
me...
Well, they just say him and her.
Oh, it's narrated.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, and also, the icing on the cake is the punny tagline at the end, to the vector, the spoils. Exactly. Yeah. It's just...
That spoiled it.
Yeah, exactly. But did you know it's... I see what you did.
Yeah.
So, but it was the 60s. So like...
Yeah. So, it was the 60s.
Yeah. Well, so I did a little digging on it and I learned that The Dot and the Line was inspired by Flatland. Did you ever read Flatland?
The only thing that comes to mind is Flat Stanley, and I know that's different.
That is definitely different. Flatland, in Flatland, all the women, it's a very short novel. In Flatland, all the women are lines, and all the men are multi-sided shapes.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
So this guy, is this also Norton Juster?
No. No.
Okay, that's good.
This is a different author. So in this world, women can only ever be lines.
Uh-huh.
But men have the possibility of being born with more regularity and more sides than their fathers, which allows them to advance in class with the goal to someday produce a circle, the perfect shape, which can only be male. Flatland, apparently, was written as a satire of the prevalent views of class and the roles of women in the Victorian era.
Okay.
But I would not have known that if I hadn't read the foreword, because I feel like the satire isn't entirely clear.
It needs a foreword, yeah.
It absolutely needs a foreword. But The Dot and the Line does not really share that satire at all.
Can we pretend that it does?
We can pretend. We can pretend. I feel like, you know, it's humorous and clever, but the gender portrayals, I feel, are pretty sincere because it's the time that it was made in. But we can pretend that it's satire.
I'll give a little forward at the beginning.
Sounds great.
Okay.
Okay, so back to Chuck Jones.
Mm-hmm. I guess I'm already giving that forward, actually. So
that's true, yeah. Well, I mean...
Maybe I already gave it.
Maybe you did. You've got a better sense of that right now than I do.
It would be the right side of my brain doing that, which makes sense.
You would also know that better than I would.
So, all right.
Okay, Chuck Jones.
Yes.
He must have been a fan of the subject matter imagined by Norton Juster, working with him on The Dot and the Line, because in 1968, the studio went into production on their most ambitious project.
Was it this one?
Da 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 da. Yes.
Yes. This one.
This one. Which is the first novel ever written by Norton Juster.
Okay. So he just did short stories before that?
Well, I don't think he had written The Dot and the Line yet.
Oh, okay.
So the book, Phantom Tollbooth, was published in 1961 with illustrations by Jules Pfeiffer. And what were your opinions about the book since you just finished it?
I enjoyed it a lot. It goes by quickly because it is a children's book, but it's definitely a super high quality children's book because things just keep happening. And there are a few characters in the book that aren't in the movie, which was exciting for me because usually you read the book first and then you're disappointed by the movie. But in this case, I was enthralled by the movie and then pleasantly surprised by the book.
Did it kind of broaden that world a little bit for you?
Not really. The movie was very faithful. I was reading this book and reading the dialogue and the conversations and thinking, I remember this conversation. This is a verbatim conversation of the movie. So that's a good sign. The only like fleshing out it did was that Milo meets more characters in the book. Which I understand they wanted to keep just the most interesting characters for the... How long is the movie? An hour and a half, probably?
Yeah, it's not that long.
Mm-hmm.
That's really... Okay, I'm really glad to hear your opinion on this. Because it's been a while since I've read the book, so I can't really draw the comparisons. Mm-hmm. And the movie's much fresher to me, and I think the movie's amazing.
There's one difference that I thought was really interesting, but I don't know how much of a spoiler it is.
Oh, at this point, when we're in the time machine, spoilers are out the window.
Okay, got it. Because we're already watching the movie.
Exactly.
So, in the movie, there is the director, Chroma, who conducts color and he has a magical baton, and he
makes the sunrise.
Yes, he conducts the sunrise and the sunset and the stars, and it's one of my favorite scenes in the movie because right after Milo watches him do this, he takes the baton and he wants to try it himself, and things go horribly wrong. But in the movie, it is conducting color, but they have a really swelling soundtrack to go along with it, which makes sense because they're still trying to preserve the idea that it's conducting music, even though it's color. Mm-hmm. In the book, he has no baton. It actually specifically says that he had no baton and that he conducted with his entire body instead. And there are hundreds of musicians that he is conducting. So he's not actually conducting the colors directly. He's conducting the musicians who have all of these instruments that can that control the colors.
Oh, neat.
Yeah.
He's painting with other people.
Yeah. So I understand why they changed that for the movie, because it made it much more visually interesting for him to just be directly controlling the color. But having but reading it, it made more sense for you could have more details in the when you're reading it. Mm-hmm. So it has a whole entire page about every single instrument that's in the orchestra, and there's an entire section of like 100 bass fiddles.
That's really cool. I mean, yeah, I like that concept a lot, because I mean that makes more sense, like because a conductor is painting using people as instruments.
Yeah. Instead of just directly creating sound.
Exactly. So I'm really glad to hear your opinion of the movie adaptation of the book, because Norton Juster didn't really like it very much.
He didn't like the movie?
Oh, I'll get to it, but yeah, he didn't really care for it. And he also said that it's probably like that most authors don't like the movie of his
fair.
Book. But oh, yes. So, just a little bit of background on how the book was made. So, after being discharged from the Navy, Norton Juster and Jules Pfeiffer and another friend rented an apartment together while he worked for an architectural firm.
All of these people were in the Navy?
Yes.
Wow.
So, that's how they met, Jules Pfeiffer and Norton Juster. And so to combat boredom while he worked at this architectural firm, he wrote The Phantom Tollbooth, with Jules encouraging him and in drawing the illustrations. So the fact that it got published is really remarkable, in that Norton Juster had never written a children's book or a book at all. Jules Pfeiffer had never illustrated a book, and the publisher that printed and distributed it had never published a children's book.
Wow.
So
it makes a lot of sense that the illustrator and the writer were working together, because there are a lot of points in the book where the writer specifically refers to the image instead of describing something.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and I feel like Roald Dahl kind of did that too.
Oh, I actually wanted to bring up Roald Dahl, if there's time for that. Because you were talking about how authors don't usually like the movie adaptations of their books.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminded me that the only movie adaptations that I've ever really seen that I accepted as a good adaptation of the book were Roald Dahl movies. Because he was always really intimately involved in their production.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. So like Matilda, Giant Peach. Matilda is the biggest one that comes to mind, because I have some really clear memories of like the vivid images in the book and then seeing those exact images in the movie.
Interesting. I mean, I love Roald Dahl, and I've enjoyed a lot of the movies. So that makes a lot of sense. But with this book, they took it to many publishers and they all turned them down. That all the publishers said that the vocabulary was too difficult for children, and that the wordplay would be over their heads.
But that's the whole point.
And yeah, exactly. And then the fantasy, this is my favorite one, that fantasy was bad for children because it disoriented them.
I was very disoriented as
a child. Oh yeah, me too. Because all I read was fantasy and aliens and stuff.
When you're a kid,
I was walking into walls and falling over my own feet, just totally disoriented, because, you know, unicorns were all in my brain.
Oh, yeah. But like, to kids who are learning what reality is, everything is kind of fantasy.
I mean, I feel like all kids believe in magic in a certain way without even having read.
Oh, that reminds me of a different part of the book, because they visit the city of reality and also the city of illusion. And I really understand why that didn't make the cut into the movie, because the city of reality is invisible.
That's going to be difficult to have a visual representation of in a movie. So all the publishers were like, nah, except for this one that didn't publish children's books. And when it came out, though, they got many positive reviews immediately, and it's now considered a children's classic, and Jules Pfeiffer went on to be a Pulitzer Prize winning cartoonist.
Nice.
Yeah. So,
I do like his drawings. They're all very kind of rough, and I like that style.
Yeah, they're really great. I'm looking at the cover right now.
Yeah. they look like something I could draw if I did.
Well, maybe you should. So I told you that Norton Jester didn't really like the movie. I had a really difficult time finding information with him and the movie, because he was involved with the adaptation of The Dot and the Line with Chuck Jones. I don't know why he wasn't involved with this one, but
that's
he wasn't.
That's probably why I didn't like it.
I mean, that might be it. Like, maybe that's why I was trying to find it, because I was like, maybe they had some kind of disagreement or whatever. But, you know, Chuck Jones still got the rights to adapt it. So I just wanted to know what it was. And so, like, you know, everywhere you look, you see that he hated the movie. And like, there's a quote that I found. It's like, it's just, quote, it was a film I never liked. I don't think they did a good job on it. It's been around for a long time. It was well reviewed, which also makes me angry. And so, like, in print, that reads as some really extreme emotions.
Did he ever explain why he didn't like it?
Well, so I came across an interview that someone did with him on the NPR game show, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
I know that show.
Yeah, and he was super cute and charming on it. And, like, he talked about how he didn't really like it, but he sounded much more mild, you know, like, much more reasonable. And he's just like, he's like, you know, I don't think that any authors like the adaptations of their books. But he shared this memory of when he finally did see it, because he apparently avoided it for several years.
Dude.
He avoided it for several years. And then he received a flyer for a movie club double feature.
Okay.
And it was paired with Buckets of Blood.
Excellent.
Yeah. And so he went, and he made it through Buckets of Blood, but then he said he only made it through 20 minutes of the Phantom Tollbooth, and he left.
Well, the first, like, 10 minutes of the movie are the most boring part of the movie, and that's the entire point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I actually, after reading this, I watched the movie and got to, like,
that point.
Yeah, 20 minutes in, and you barely even get to the animated part.
So he didn't give it a chance.
He didn't give it a chance. Like, you get to meet the officer.
Yeah, Officer Schrift.
Yeah, Officer Schrift. But he doesn't even get to the weatherman, Kate. He doesn't get to the weatherman.
That makes me sad. Because Officer Schrift is also the worst character in the entire movie.
He's not great.
No, he goes around making siren noises with his mouth.
And gives people tickets.
Yeah, and sentences people to million years of jail, but you don't have to stay there because he doesn't care if you're in jail. He just likes putting people in jail.
Yeah. Yeah, that's obvious. That's, yeah.
That's actually very clearly stated in the book, which makes sense when I'm remembering the movie.
Oh, good to know. I mean, you kind of get that impression, but... okay, so cast, a little bit about the cast. So, as you may have guessed, a lot of the voice actors in it were like the big voice actors of the time.
Cool.
So Mel Blanc,
that's the connection. Okay.
Yeah, he did he was the Man of a Thousand Voices. We talked about him in episode 2. He did like all the voices for almost all the Looney Tunes characters.
Right.
He plays Officer Short Shrift.
Okay.
The dodecahedron. And
I forgot the dodecahedron's in the movie because I just read that part in the book. And I was like, I don't remember this guy.
Well, he's in it, I think. And the demon of insincerity.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Yeah,
I can definitely parallel the Demon of Insincerity with Officer Shrift.
Yeah. and then Dawes Butler, who plays the weatherman, the census taker, the terrible Trivium, and the gelatinous giant. He was the voice of a lot of Hanna-Barbera characters, including Yogi Bear, Huckleberry Hound, and Quick Draw McGraw.
Cool. So he's the voice of the most terrifying character in the movie.
Which one is that?
The demon. One of the demons. The terrible Trivium.
That's what I figured you're talking about. I was like, it couldn't be the gelatinous giant. He's not there for long. The terrible Trivium is terrifying.
Yeah. That's the part when I was showing this movie to Cullen with my friend. We were sitting on either side of him, and both of us immediately tensed up when he was about to come into the plot. And so Cullen kind of got a spoiler because he knew something bad was going to happen. He is scary.
I mean, not only is the idea of him scary, he also looks terrifying.
Yeah, that was really the most scary part about him, that I thought that his demeanor and his character design is very, very appropriate.
Yeah, because he's soft-spoken, and he's just like, would you mind helping me with this thing?
Very insidious.
Yes. Okay, so Candy Candido, which, like, how's that for a name?
It's a good name.
He plays the awful Den.
Okay.
And you might recognize his voice in such things as Fidget and the Great Mouse Detective, one of the goons in Sleeping Beauty, and the Crocodile Guard in Robin Hood. It's a very distinct voice. It's the
yeah. So he got typecast as like the grunt.
Well, I wonder if that's what his actual voice sounded like.
Maybe.
Hans Conried, who plays King Azaz and the Math Magician.
Their voice, that makes sense that they're voiced by the same person.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He does the voice of Captain Hook in the Disney's Peter Pan.
I can see it. Uh-huh. I can hear it.
And Thorin Oakenshield in the Rankin Bass the Hobbit. And he's the voice of the Magic Mirror in all those old Disney specials.
Just all of them? That's good.
Okay. June Foray, which Chuck Jones is quoted as saying, June Foray is not the female Mel Blanc. Mel Blanc was the male June Foray, because she apparently was so talented in creating so many different voices. So she does Ralph, which is the voice in the telephone.
The friend. Yeah.
Yeah. Faintly Macabre and the Princess of Pure Reason.
The princesses are voiced by different people.
They are.
That's funny.
Yeah, I think so too. But so she did the voices of Hazel the Witch and Granny in the Looney Tunes cartoons. Rocky the Flying Squirrel and Rocky and Bullwinkle. Lucifer from Cinderella. Cindy Lou Who and Jokey Smurf, among many, many, many others.
I think the character I can think of the most clearly is Cindy Lou Who.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I could hear Rocky's voice too. Okay.
I didn't know that the Cinderella cat had words.
I think it's mostly like meow, 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 I don't know. It's been a while. Okay, and so this is my favorite bit of trivia about the cast.
Trivia me up.
Okay. So the kid that plays Milo is named Butch Patrick. And as I was watching the movie, I kept thinking, that kid is so familiar. How could I possibly know this kid? And I was going through the catalog of all the old movies that had kids in them, and I just could not place him. And then I figured it out. And what threw me off was the red hair. So let's make his red hair black and give him a super dramatic widow's peak and pointy ears. And do you know who he is? Eddie Munster from the old Munster TV series.
Neat.
I could tell that you never watched it.
I don't know what you're talking about, but that's neat. I didn't know he had red hair.
Well, you've heard of the Addams Family?
Yes.
Okay, the other TV show that came out on the same year that was also about a monster family was called The Munsters.
Oh. Oh. That's a poorly timed show.
They did it on purpose.
Oh, okay.
They totally did it on purpose. Okay. They meant to compete with each other. Okay.
One of them won.
Well, the Munsters was actually more popular back then.
At the time.
Yeah. Okay. Off topic. Okay, so the reception of the movie. So the film was completed by 1968, but it was held up for release by MGM until late 1970. So it was 2 years later due to internal problems. I tried to figure out what those internal problems were, and the best I can figure without getting too deep into it, for time's sake, is that MGM underwent some huge leadership changes with people that were not interested in filmmaking as a means of saving the studio because it was having problems financially. So in that time, the people that became in charge, they eliminated big budget movies entirely, and they scaled back on productions in general. They sold all their historical memorabilia, including Dorothy's slippers, and they sold a major part of their backlot for real estate. And then they took all of the golden age of Hollywood grandeur that MGM had built over the decades and poured it all into the creation of the MGM Grand Hotel in Las Vegas. So that is the direction that MGM took at that time. And that is why I think that this movie was like pretty much ignored, and why I don't think it got very much advertising when it was released.
I was hoping for a hero story of how this movie saved the studio, because that happened with some of the movies we've already watched.
Unfortunately not for this one. So like it, I think there was a lack of interest in helping the movie, because that's why it was released so late. And shortly after, the animation studio closed for good, and MGM stopped doing animation. So it didn't do well in the box office, but it received fairly positive reviews, which is what made Norton Juster so mad.
Get mad. It's a good movie.
Yeah, it's really good. So finally, before we leave the time machine, because I think that we're wrapping it out of there. Do you get the sense that we are?
I'm feeling a lot of stairs that might be ascending into the air.
Okay. Okay, so we're getting close. Mm-hmm. All right. Did you ever hear that there's plans for a remake?
Is there?
There are, yeah.
Like now?
Yes, really soon.
Ooh, no. The answer is no.
Okay, well, it's kind of been in production hell since 2010.
All right,
so we'll see what happens. But this year it was finally assigned to a new director and a new writer. So we'll see what happens.
Cool, that makes me nervous.
Well, I mean, the director directed Ice Age and Ferdinand.
Like the first Ice Age?
The first Ice Age.
Because I like Ferdinand.
Yeah.
The Ice Age movies took a weird turn.
And the writer directed Hidden Figures.
Okay.
That's a very different movie. And
I
couldn't see that he has any experience with animated children's movies.
Interesting. We just gotta take it as a new story.
Yeah.
And not be too attached.
Well, a new adaptation of the story.
Yeah. I don't know. Sometimes adaptations are.
And maybe Norton Juster will like it more. He's still alive, by the way.
Oh, it'd be cool to meet him and then make fun of him for not liking the movie that I grew up with.
That would be fun for
you.
Yeah.
Over coffee.
Well, I really hope that for you.
That'd
someday.
Be cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Tell me how that goes.
All right.
Okay. Great. Well, are you ready to rejoin the party?
To rejoin my right half? Yes, I've missed it dearly.
I have missed it dearly too. I will be quite frank.
Okay.
Okay.
Do you have like time stitches?
Time stitches. Do we have a first aid kit?
A time first aid kit?
With the updates?
Yeah,
okay. Oh, thank goodness. Okay.
There are many closets in this time machine.
That's true. But I think it's probably in the one labeled first aid.
Okay.
All right, let's go.
All passengers must return to their respective times. Goodbye.
Den!
Come here!
Mom!
Come here! Delilah. Oh, all right, okay. So. Shh. Kate. Before we start anything, are you feeling okay? Both of your sides have rejoined.
I got zipped back up.
You got zipped back up and you were feeling
all right.
I forgot
to tell everyone that only my right side was present during the movie.
Yeah. Well, it's a good thing you didn't let people know.
They might have freaked out.
They might have freaked out.
But in front of everyone, I zipped up and no one noticed because no one wanted to notice.
I guess that's the best way to do it.
Time
Don't
zips.
Don't let anybody know that you've got a zip. So we finished watching The Phantom Tollbooth. Thank you, everybody, for sticking around. So before we start the rest of the questions, is there anybody here that has seen the movie before? Ilya, you're the only one.
Really?
Oh, yes. Well, yeah, but you didn't watch it when you were little. You watched it recently. Ilya, here you go.
So this is a movie that we watched in school on the days when the teacher either wasn't in or whatever. And I remember seeing it several times. And I just remember it being really weird, but not really, I don't know, I didn't remember a whole lot of details from it. It was just something that was a part of the school boring movie.
Oh, okay.
Okay, cool. Thanks for sharing. Okay, so I had three major favorite topics of conversation when I was little: ghost stories, dreams, and jokes. And you know, just because like there's a whole bunch of play on words and like stuff like that in the movie, I thought it'd be fun if anybody remembers their favorite jokes from when they were little. Anybody?
My favorite joke from when I was little was, what does a cake and a baseball team have in common?
What does it have in common?
They both need a batter.
Oh!
And see. Anybody else remember jokes from when they were little? I feel like people are probably trying to remember the ones that weren't bad.
Excuse me.
No. I mean like offensive bad.
Yeah, I have one of those.
I have a joke from a kid that I knew that told a joke.
Okay, so I can't remember from my childhood, but I had a friend's son who was 4 years old, and one day he's like, knock knock.
Who's there?
Pickle.
Pickle who?
Pickle fucker. He was 4 years old. It was amazing.
Knock knock.
Who's there?
Nobody.
Nobody who?
Lol.
Okay, no more knock knock jokes.
I have a joke. It's not
you have a joke joke.
It's not a knock joke.
Okay.
What did Batman say to Robin before they got in the car?
What?
Robin, get in the car!
you told that one when you were a kid?
Oh, many times.
That's an anti-joke. That's actually pretty advanced.
I have a joke that the 4 or 5-year-olds in my classroom like right now.
Okay, great.
This is the whole joke. I just need to prepare you for that. This is the entire joke. And they laugh hysterically for like 5 minutes straight. Are you ready? Yeah. Squirty butts.
Oh, no. Okay. All right, so the next question. What's the worst semantic argument / conversation you've ever had? Now, Kate wanted me to ask this question, and immediately I had an answer for it. When I was really little, my mom and dad sat me down in the den, and they asked, Bailey, we want you to explain to us what duh means. and very seriously. And I looked at them and I said, I was in first grade. And I said, I already know that. And they said, well, we know you already know that. What does duh mean? I already know that. And they said, we understand that you know it. We want you to explain it to us. Please tell us what duh means. And I was like, I already know that. Because I didn't know, like, I couldn't figure out how to communicate that any better. Like, it means I already know that. So that's my story with the, yeah.
That's good.
Thanks, Colin. Anybody else?
So me and my brother used to watch America's Funniest Videos together, and the guy who hosted it was named Tom Bergeron. But when I read it as a little kid in kindergarten, I thought it was Tom Burgertown. And I thought all last names had to be words, and I didn't think Bergeron was a word. So I told my brother, no, his name is Tom Burgertown, when my brother was reading the credits. And he was like, no, you're wrong. You're stupid. And so I fully believed his name was Tom Burgertown. So when we went to McDonald's, I'd be like, give me the Tom Burgertown. Like on the playscape and stuff to the other kids. And I thought my brother was just lying to me. Like, I didn't even think he was like trying to argue with me. I thought he was trying to trick me. But I was convinced that it was Tom Burgertown. And I still cast extreme doubt on that.
Were you a math person or a word person? Nico, Ilya.
I was definitely and still to this day a math person. I still don't really think I'm very good at words, even though Bailey tells me otherwise. And I really like numbers, and I remember numbers a lot better than names or words or anything like that. And they just make a lot more sense in my mind than, you know, spelling or things like that. And I was always really good at math. And yeah. And now I build stuff with numbers and measurements and things like that. Yep.
Thank you, Ilya.
This one's a really tough question because they're both pretty cool. Like, numbers are cool because they start to form really awesome structures as you learn new math concepts. And that's really sweet. But words, I was always drawn to because there were rules, but then you could break them and that made better writing or better words. And that was cool. I thought that was awesome. So I was always really drawn to English, even though I was really good at math and not very good at English.
So I never saw this movie when I was a kid. And that might be a good thing because the whole argument between the two kings would have really pissed me off. I don't think I was ever really a number or a word person. They're kind of just things that you use, you know? That's my take.
So not a cat or a dog person.
Oh, definitely a cat person.
Oh, I thought you were a bird person.
Well, I mean, given the choice.
What did you do when you were bored when you were little? Are you stretching?
No. Well, this was probably the stupidest thing I ever did one time when I was bored. Sorry. I should know this thing. I do sound. Okay. So one time when I was bored, I decided to make a flamethrower. went around the house, found a yardstick, found a kitchen lighter, found a, oh, I was in middle school, so what did I have in middle school? A can of Axe body spray. Yeah, whoa. So I made a flamethrower, kind of lit a book in my room on fire, and then it looked like it was going to catch my desk on fire, and I almost got caught, and it was really scary. That's what I did when I was bored.
I have a tangential story because it's also about fire. So one time also in middle school, it was winter outside and me and my twin and our other friend we found a pipe sticking out of the ground and we're like, what's down there? We can't see down there. It's too dark. What do we do? So we decided to light matches and throw them down there.
Oh, no.
which we did. This is a yellow pipe sticking out of the ground. And we so we threw these matches down there. We threw some snow in there just to make sure if they were still lit in there, they would go out. And then nothing happened because they didn't really stay lit long enough to go all the way down there. So then we decided that what we were going to do was play this game where these were box matches. And so we would try to light them and fling them at the same time at each other, which was a really dumb game. And one time during this game, my friend Sam got me right smack in the cheek, just hit me right in the cheek with a lit match, and it stuck to my face and burned a little circle on my face. And the lies that I told about what actually actually happened when my parents got home and they're like, why is your face burned in a little circle on your cheek? It was really dumb. And so then, of course, they saw right through me. And then eventually I had to tell them everything about what we were doing, which kind of went in backwards order about the dumb game with flinging matches, and then backwards to the part where we were lighting matches and throwing them down a gas pipe, which is what that fucking was. Could have blown up the whole damn neighborhood. Terrible ideas. Terrible ideas.
What did you tell your parents that came from?
What's that?
What did you tell your parents that the burn came from?
Oh, I tried to, like, you know, my mom is one of those, the question for those, because that wasn't on mic, is what did I tell my parents? And what I told them is, so my mom is one of those people who, like, neutralizes bathroom smells with matches. And so we would always have, like, a book of matches in the bathroom. And so I told her that I was waving the match to blow it out, and the top popped off and hit me in the face. It was the best I could do at 13.
I have another story about being bored and playing with fire. So hand sanitizer is super flammable. So I would get a big glob of it in my hand, and I would be over the fireplace because my parents taught me how to play with fire. And oh yeah, because I was gonna do it anyway. And I would light my I would cover my hands in it, and then I would light my hands on fire, and I would like just do kind of like just move my hands around while they're on fire, and it wasn't hot. It's like lighting. It's like lighting alcohol on fire. It's alcohol that I was lighting on fire. But it was fun to impress people with, because my little sister would like go over and be like, "Kate, what are you doing?" And then she would see my hands on fire, and she's like, "Oh no!" And then she would bring her friends down to see too. And I wasn't doing anything like complicated. It was just that my hands were on fire, and that's basically the whole story. Fire went out when the alcohol and the hand sanitizer was out.
When I was really little, before I knew better, which was probably like 4 years old, we had a lot of baby kittens. And I got really bored, and I was playing with them in the front yard, and I picked them up by their tails and swirled them around and threw them. I threw them, and then they came back, and I did it again. And that's one of the worst, most terrible things. And my mom came out, and I got in a lot of trouble. I didn't know they didn't like it, you guys. I was really little. I had no idea.
To be fair, they kept coming back.
I would never do it again. And then as I got older, I learned how to play with cats more. And the first time I saw snow, we were bored. And I took a water ski, and we slid down the driveway across the street that's like a 45-degree angle. And my cat at the time was super stoked and sat on the thing every single time with me. So going from, you know, throwing cats to, like, you know, the best friend. So, you know, it's good. Yeah.
Well, to negate that story about throwing cats, there are multiple pictures of me as a child fully sitting on top of my cat, Crystal, aka Grandma, because she had multiple litters who had multiple litters. And she loved me till she died when she was 18. So, animals. So what I liked to do when I was bored was directly related to what my dad liked to do when he was bored. And what?
Whiskey.
No, not drink whiskey. Though that's a different story. He liked to buy tons and tons. And when I say tons, I mean the weight. Tons and tons of dirt. And just, we always had dirt mounds on our property. Yes. And he bought a Bobcat excavator so that he could move the dirt around. That's what he liked to do. It's an adult sandbox. And for me, it was a child sandbox. So what I liked to do when I was bored was go out to the dirt mounds and build furniture out of dirt and create little tunnels and like homes for myself. And I would just like live inside the dirt. I would sit on the dirt patio. I would look out on to all of the dirt mounds and be like, these are my bearings. These are my properties. These are my land. And then I would just build homes in each of the dirt mounds. Oh my
God. That's amazing. I used to dream about building an underground fortress with furniture made of dirt. So you lived the dream.
I lived the dream.
you have one? You have a?
Well, so did anybody else make forts?
Yeah.
Okay, your story reminded me of the fort that we made. Our game room, our den. We had so much crap. Just so much crap. Four boys, and our parents are also hoarders. Great, great combination. We made this giant... it's right here. Okay, fine. Okay. Closer. Okay. So we made this awesome fort. We had a TV with a VCR in it. I think we even had a mini fridge. But then I brought Chinese takeout into it and left it just sitting there. And then the ants took over our fort. And that was the end of our fun.
I have a fort story.
My sister and I built a fort, and we needed something to prop it up to be taller. So we put a lamp under there. And then we were like, perfect, a reading lamp. And then we turned the lamp on and left it on. And then... The blanket caught fire.
That's the end of the story.
All of our forts ended in tragedy. That's forts too.
Well, Kate.
Yes.
How was this experience for you?
This was cool because I finished the book today. And there are characters in the book that weren't in the movie. And it was also weird because I was having a new experience of the movie. And having read the book, the movie actually did seem a little rushed. And I'm a little bit sympathetic to the author who didn't like it, but still not very sympathetic because it's still a good movie. I enjoyed it. It'd be cool if there were more shorts in the same style about Milo's other adventures.
was there anything that occurred to you, like, while watching the movie? Anything that we left out before?
I didn't know that they made the carry the three joke so many times, because in the book, that joke is made once when the mathematician's like, all right, I've shown you the number mines, it's time for you to be on your way. And Milo's like, all right, we'll just go walk over to the car. And the math magician says, nonsense, I'll just carry the three. And he picks them all up and he carries them to the car. And they didn't make that joke in the movie, but they made it like four other times.
Well, thank you so much for sharing this with everyone.
I'm glad everyone liked it. Did everyone like it?
Yeah. Well, until next time, return your videos here.
Oh, I love numbers so much. My love for numbers is unquantifiable. I love them so much that I can't help but sing about them. Tick-tock goes the clock, counting out its numbers. A chime at the proper time wakes me from my slumbers. And then I work the day away, for it's worth being encumbered. So I can watch the numbers on the graph go up, 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 up. Yes, I live for the numbers.
But what of rhyme and rhyme?
Oh yes, I time every season, down to the minute, for my life is made of numbers.
Balderdash, words are obviously far superior to numbers. Words are so useful. Words, words, words. Words, 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 words. I love to use words all day long. Words, 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 words. I have so many things to say, and that's why I like words. Words, 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 words.
But what
of
rhyme and reason?
Oh, them's is fancy words worth keeping, and I'll keep them forever, for my life is made of words.
Well, it would seem that you and I just don't see eye to eye. Perhaps we should turn to this individual for a tiebreaker.
Yes, tell him how wrong he is.
I don't like words or numbers.
What?
I think that the true nature of reality can't be grasped through the use of any sort of symbology. And we're doing ourselves a continual disservice by limiting our perceptions to words and equating value with numbers. If you think about it, there's something bigger.
Oh, what a load. No, we know it's all about the numbers.
Words, 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 words.
All about the numbers.
Memory Static is hosted by Bailey Moore and produced and edited by me, Eric Dumig. Special thanks to Kate Windsor for being the guest on this month's episode, and thank you to Delilah, Yakko, and Geronimo for hosting the party. Music for this episode is by Bailey and Cullen Moore. If you like the show, please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/memorystatic, and if you happen to be listening to the show on Apple Music, please consider giving us a rate and review, as this will help us get out to more ears. People's ears, cat's ears, dog's ears. As always, thanks to our partygoers for coming on out and watching the movie with us. And for all you static heads out there, we've got a special treat coming soon. It's the release of all of the music from season one of Memory Static. We'll be posting where that will be soon. All right. That's it. That's the whole show. If you're still listening, I apologize for my mouth noise. Thanks for listening.